school vouchers hot topic today. We've got Diane Douglas from Arizona talking about their experience with ESA. It's not like you would expect. Dr. Marlene McMillan, who always helps us think from premises principally, and Dr. Douglas Pierretsma, former Air Force intelligence officer, who says rats die because they don't realize why the cheese is free. It's not more liberty and education, folks. School choice is a deceptive term. It's about vouchers. What would that be like? Chapter 4, Caveat Emptor, Arizona's ESA Voucher Expansion, by Diane Douglas, we already said, was superintendent in Arizona. So already in 2011, Arizona enacted the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, ESA, so that students who withdrew from public or charter schools could receive a portion of state funding, but vouchers were ruled unconstitutional by the Arizona Supreme Court under Arizona's version of the Blaine Amendment because the funds were earmarked for private and sectarian schools. But in 2013, they were upheld. So she questions whether this system will really be controlled by parents. She goes into the various laws and the histories in Arizona. And so rather than arguing in the abstract, you might want to see what has happened in Arizona. So she argues that with ESAs, still the government rules over children's education. Chapter 5, Vouchers Without Choice, by Dr. Marlene McMillan. And she is well known as saying that that which is wrong in premise will be wrong in result. And she gives 7 premises on which voucher support is built. 1, you can take government money without government control. 2, children are entitled to their fair share of public money used for education in their school district, which is an entitlement. 3, once money is in the coffers of an ISD, an independent school district, it is still the taxpayers' money. So ISDs are what we do here in Texas. So if money is now in the hands of the government, is it still taxpayers' money or is it government money? 4, the children belong to themselves and or to their parents. Or do the children belong to the government? Well, different people argue differently on that. And parents need to realize this. Christian parents need to realize this, that they're at the far left, and often the professionals think that children belong to the government. And it starts with the camel under the nose. I'm talking not Dr. McMillan at this point, that the government does have an interest in seeing the children are not abused. So far, so good. But that has morphed into, we must get these children away from these parents before the parents socialize them, train them, and warped their little personalities by teaching them there is a right and wrong. Okay, back to Dr. Marley. Okay, 5, premise. It is an accepted fact that education is a function of civil government, and everyone should pay for the education of everyone else's children. 6, parents don't have a choice now. And she argues with this premise, says, yes, they do. They just don't want to pay for it themselves. 7. Vouchers promote free enterprise competition between government and private schools, thus improving education for all children. So truth, she says, may or may not bring immediate pain, but always brings long-term peace. A lie brings the illusion of immediate relief, but always brings long-term suffering. So she argues in 9 points, for there to be peace in a nation or a family, then the children must be taught by the Lord and about the Lord, Deuteronomy 6, Isaiah 54 and 13, which was quoted, by the way, by Jesus in Matthew. Freedom of thought is more important for liberty than convenience. To have freedom of thought, you must have parental control of education. 3. To have a strong nation, you cannot have a dependency or an entitlement mindset. 4. A person values what they have to pay for. Well, my father always argued that people will pay for what they value. Back to Dr. Marlene. Until the method of funding education is changed, there will be no substantive change in the result of education. 5. Vouchers take away educational freedom under the guise of providing it. 6. You get more of what you subsidize and less of what you penalize. 7. The goal and content of private and government education is different. Private education is to prepare children to be self-governing for their own safety and happiness, whereas the state school is to prepare children to conform to the so-called good of the collective. These opposing goals cannot be paid for by the same source. I think that's important, so let me report that. The goal and content of private education and the goal and content of government education are opposed to one another. Private education is intended to prepare children to be self-governing for their safety and happiness. Through, I'm going to add, not just higher academic standards, but based on Judeo-Christian moral principles. Well, it could be on some other kind of sectarian principles, but I'm going to argue for Judeo-Christian principles. You know, the Muslims have their own schools, and the Hindus have their own schools, etc., etc. Okay, whereas the state education, government-controlled schools, were explicitly set up in order to make good Americans, and increasingly, and not, by the way, without explicitly articulating this, they are set up to prepare children to conform to the so-called good of the collective, is Dr. McMillan's words. So they want to make good little statists, and if it's Marxists, then it's good little Marxists. And we need to stop saying, this is my words, we need to stop saying liberal, because communism is not liberal. We're just used to calling those on the left liberal. They're not. They're completely illiberal. They're communist. They're pushing cultural Marxism, which has never worked in any nation where it has been tried. And people we know have risked their lives to get themselves and their children out. So why are we hell-bent on trying it here? Anyway, these are opposing goals, making children self-governing versus making them statists. Different goals, different content, different pedagogical methodologies. Why do we think these opposing goals could be paid for by the same coffers? I mean, I really think that needs to sink in. All right, and then the lie is unmasked. 8. Dr. McMillan argues, education is inherently religious. The idea that the government can provide a secular education that is neutral is a logical impossibility. And I would say by extension also, it's highly unlikely that a government that is so dedicated to anti-religion is unlikely to be willing to, in good faith, support sectarian education. Dr. Marlene, number 9, control follows money. He who pays controls. Government money comes with government strings attached. The government cannot throw money in the streets. Regulations are inherent to all voucher schemes. As soon as a private school takes government money, it becomes a government school. Freedom of thought requires freedom of finance. Entitlement, okay, this is my words, entitlement is addictive. Back to Dr. Marlene McMillan. Vouchers are based on the redistribution of wealth. Vouchers are rooted in socialism. Public schools are based on 4 false premises. Welfare works, socialism works, parents have insufficient wisdom, and we can teach character without mentioning God. Okay, now I'm going to argue that government schools have inherently refused to teach character. Now, there are some blossoms, some buds of the opposite because the traditional statist method has not worked, cannot work, but anyway. Or perhaps it's a different character. Certainly it's a substitute value system. Back to Dr. Marlene. We need to replace these false premises with truisms. And the truisms I suggest are responsibility works, freedom works, parents have more wisdom than politicians. And I'm going to add here, I'm going to say, parents care more about their children than any sort of professional or politician. Parents care about their children more than anyone else. Okay, back to Dr. McMillan. 4, to teach character, we must integrate 3 factors. The reason for morality, the examples of morality, and instruction in morality. And she's quoting Marshall Fritz, whose words were published in the Plano Star Courier. And if you want an extended version of the chapter, which first I would recommend you read the chapter, but for more updates, you may sign up at Dr. Marlene McMillan's site, Why Liberty Matters. She has a very long list of credentials. She did homeschool all 7 of her children. She has written several books, and she has taught at a seminary. Okay, and she's been a platform speaker for many years. Chapter 6, Don't Take the Cheese, The Trap of School Choice Initiative by Douglas Piersma, who has a doctorate in education. He says the term school choice is being thrown around a lot on social media and even in the mainstream media. Parents seem to be flustered at various aspects of public schooling, from the content of instruction to the unwarranted restrictions on movement, contact, and even breathing. For years, there has been an increasing crescendo of issues regarding safety, and 2, the instruction of struggling or advanced learners. 3, the common theme, despite the disparate reasons for opposition, is the idea that an unfettered government cannot be trusted to control every aspect of education of children. Proponents of school choice generally advocate for some sort of voucher or fund-shifting system which allows the dollars to follow the child to another school, or perhaps even to funding homeschooling. And so he appreciates this need for change, and he says his personal preference would be a complete abandonment, an abolition. But he doesn't think that that's likely to happen. So I think he agrees with me that we're willing to think about, you know, maybe public schools are so bad we shouldn't have them. But since that's not reasonable, he's not confident that the voucher program will work. He says, as a Christian, it's unfathomable to me that families of any faith tradition, even a weak faith tradition, would allow their children to be sent to an institution that teaches secular humanism. So he says that we've been deceived if we think that the state schools are neutral. And so he picks up the idea of Christian schools, and he says, of course, this may be better than the state schools, but he's a product of it, and he says he thinks this is largely ineffective. You can read his, and so he thinks the only really viable option for good discipleship would be home education, and you need to read his argument. And so he is also retired military. His doctorate of education comes from Regent University. So Regent University is the one out in Virginia, because there's Regents, plural, which is in Vancouver. Okay, so he is the editor of Homeschool Researcher, a peer-reviewed journal, which focuses on homeschool-related research work. Oh, wonderful. Okay. And he not only homeschools his two children, but directs Alta Meta Homeschool Auxiliary, which provides co-curricular homeschool courses in the Cheyenne area. Okay, lovely. And lots of resources in what you're used to calling a bibliography.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.
I started the Great Shalom broadcast, which now we say Overcoming Learning Disability, because I felt like it was the command of God, and it certainly was the command of my pastor, to help those who had children who were having learning problems, school problems, or something like that, because I had exceptional victories. And of course, no one gets victories without battles. I understand the pain of having a learning disability. I understand the pain of having a child with learning disabilities. I understand the frustration of coming up against a brick wall of school time and time and time again. Public school, private school. And then with my grandchildren slamming even harder. But I have victories to tell about and the mandate of God to share it with you. You see, I have a learning disability. I am dyslexic. They said I was brain damaged. I was given a serious drug when I was in upper elementary school. I had to take it at school. And being given this drug, I had to go periodically to some medical place where I had my brain waves tested. It was horrible. And later, when I looked it up in the blue book, the drug manual, I saw that this had grave potential harm. Horrible. And then when I was in the fifth and sixth grade, I was being pulled out of class and had to do some sort of exercise. It was very embarrassing, but worst of all was the teacher who told me that I would never graduate from high school. And in my family, that was beyond horrible. Yeah, I was brain damaged, and everybody in school knew it. But I was exceptionally lucky, fortunate, blessed. My parents were very academically oriented. And if there was anything I was prepared for, it was to be a good student. And the one thing I dreamed of was coming back to that teacher when I graduated from high school and telling her that I had graduated with honors. And then in my young imagination, she would fall through the floor. Well, I did graduate with honors, but she was dead by that time, so I didn't get to see her fall through the floor. But I did know that I had succeeded and that I was not stupid. then when I was in my 20s and I was a young mother, a worker, and helping my husband in his business, time and time again, I discovered that far from being stupid, I was a little bit brighter than most. Well, today, again, I know that I was blessed because of my parents' teaching. I had a better than average school, and perhaps genetics, a genetic predisposition to being diligent for certain. And boy howdy, a lot of discipline distilled by both parents. And when I was in my 20s, I did feel like I was brighter than the people around me. And then, being close to 30, I went to college. I went to university. I went to a senior university. And I made good grades. You bet. I graduated from one of the largest senior universities in the country with highest honors and special honors in my subject matter as a single parent in 2 years. Well, I had some transfer credits. And then I went on to seminary, a traditional one, with passed down abuse as a single mom. And I got a bunch more academic honors. And later, I joined Mensa. Now, I don't normally mention all of this, except in connection with saying that I'm dyslexic and was called brain damage, because I hope that it encourages people. Clearly, I learned to study. No thanks to my father, who yelled at me and scared me half to death. Little thanks to my mother, who similarly would castigate and spank. Although, I guess that did cost me to be a good student. Certainly, no thanks to my teachers, who gave me the silliest techniques imaginable. Indeed, wasted my time to such an extent that when I was in sixth grade, I knew it and could explain it to them. But surely I knew better than to say anything less than deferential. By the time I had my daughter, things were different, but of course, she got dyslexia because it's genetic. She got that from me. And she got ADD from her father. And gosh, poor thing, academic fervor from me. And again, with abusive teachers. Abusive. So it was at that time I began to be mobilized to defend her. I was fully deployed in a competitive college and a graduate school. I was a single parent, and I had to spend hours every day because I had to teach her when her teachers didn't. And she cried so much, and I had to regularly fight with school officials to enforce law and sanity upon them. By the time that she was in high school, it was abundantly evident that she could get a better education with me. And it was going to be a lot easier on me. She shot up in academic standing. She gained 2 years in academic standing based on standardized tests every 6 months that I taught her for 4 semesters in a row. Think about what that actually means. So she started with scores that said she read at the 4th grade level, and 2 years later she was reading at a 13th grade level. That's right. And in the meantime, she began to have a decent life instead of working every moment on school and crying all the time. She graduated valedictorian. Then she got an associate's degree and a bachelor's in engineering. So I had found victory for me. I found victory for my daughter. But then there was another level. Then there was my grandsons, and they inherited a genetic load from their mother, and then from their father, a different genetic load. And then my daughter had a terrible automobile accident. So I took a leave of absence from my teaching at a college assignment. I was teaching at a college, and I had to explain to my pastor why I was going. Had to explain to my father why I was leaving work. And, you know, my father wanted me to be earning money so I could earn money for my grandson's college education. And I had to explain to him, Dad, I could work all my life and not pay for the therapy that they're going to need. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to go into school, let alone graduate from high school and get to college. Well, okay. And so I explained that to my pastor, and he said, can you really do that? Yes, I'm thinking. I wouldn't ever say to him, but why would I have said that if I didn't mean that? He said, you write the book. Well, the book is written, and it's called Learn at Home for Great Shalom. But I really felt the Lord want me to go on the radio, because who reads a book? But then after a while, I realized that young women were much more likely to listen to a podcast than to, so it's on podcast. And so it was in 08, I went on the radio, and a few years later, I went on podcast, making me an early adopter. My numbers were up in those early years. I could compare myself, the numbers I got, with some of the most famous Christian broadcasters. But things are very different today. Very likely, my numbers are suppressed because I was curating COVID information on my website. But also, there's a whole lot more competition today, a lot more podcasts today than there was in, what, 2010, 2012. So anyway, I do want you to share my podcast. Please do that. And I put on it the basic faith message. And I have interviews with professionals who have good ideas. And I teach or share whatever I know as a student, a mother, and a grandmother with some victory to tell about. There's a new crop of kids all the time and new perceived problems. And I'm hopeful that it helps. But still, I meet mothers and grandmothers who are desperate. And usually I have 10 minutes before the service or 10 minutes after the service. That's just not much time. And they tell me they have hit the brick wall, that their kids are in trouble, that they are desperate, and that school folks are not helping at all, and they have no options. And so I try to quickly give them a faith perspective and help them to see that they do have options. And of course, I'm not seeing the child at that moment, so usually I can't be sure of, you know, of like what the diagnosis is and what the child. And of course, they could come and call me and consult with me and take testing. Or they could hire, an educational psychologist and get a full battery of testing and come out with a report that they didn't understand and go to the school for people who didn't understand that and didn't really care. And they could hire an attorney to go with their student from class to class, because that's what it's going to take to enforce the law on a school. And that's what I decided, and that's why I pulled my daughter out of public school when she was in high school. But also, she wanted me to do that. And homeschooler. Anyway, you could spend the money on an attorney, or you could spend it on a college education. But either way, you're going to be exhausted if you try to fight with the system. And many parents are not even worried about learning disabilities anymore because of the other horrendous problems that are going on in public school. I mean, can you imagine? Grooming is the official policy. It's mind-boggling. So here is the situation. There's a lot of needs, a big need. How could I help better? How could I get the word out better? I'm giving you a podcast now for years for free. I've got some books on Amazon, but I don't have time to market them. Well, and also on Lulu.com. How can I help you more? I can ask you to share, but how can I help you more and more people? Well, the answer seems to present itself that I could put together a recorded program that would run you through the steps toward making the situation better in your home and reaching out for the right educational solutions. And so, That's what I'm going to do. Make a one-size-fits-all program. And again, you could call me for specifics and get some consulting. You could call someone else. The only thing that I know that's like this is a program. And I've actually interviewed the people in town who do this. And they charge $86,000. Well, 5-10 years ago, they charged $86,000. But I can tell you about it. So I did put together a group program for lioness mothers. But anyway, maybe we'll get that up again. But for now, I've got this. It's a recorded program. So we're going to call it Celebrate the Victory. And you can download it all. And there is a focus. So there's 12 portions to it. If I said 12 steps, you would get the wrong idea. But anyway, there's 12. So if you are desperate and you have a lot of energy and you want to do this, you could probably listen to the program in 12 weeks easily. Okay, so there's 12 steps. But the idea was that you could do one focus every month. And so you might want to do it the first time in 12 weeks, but then take each one of these every month, every year, you know, focus on that every year. I've numbered them 1 through 12, so it doesn't have to be January through December. You can start where you want to start. But you're going to need probably the whole program because there's a synergy in it. So here's a focus. Here's a program. Here's a process. It will help you. But what about you? Will you get it? Will you invest in it? Would you apply it to yourself and your child? Only you can answer that. So I'm putting up the program, carving out more time to make this program, and I'm going to start with faith and hope, the basics so you can marshal things to get your home and your child in order, and then talk about the various professional options and teach the right stuff, do the right stuff. And yes, we're going to talk about homeschooling because in today's world, you can't avoid it. So we'll talk about it. Some people tell me they can't afford private school, can't afford homeschooling. But my question is, can you afford to put your kids in public school? And then you wonder why they're alienated from you. You wonder why you can't get these other professionals on your team to care about your kids' education. Well, okay, you're going to have to sort through those options. But anyway, I want you to get, you can get my book, Learn a Home for Great Shalom, and you've got several other books, Winning the Game of School, which is about study skills, and several others. So let me tell you that many people have been helped. When I talk to people for 10 minutes, they go away with a smile on their face and knowing they have some options. You've heard Betty and Melanie on episodes talking about the miracles they have received. As we were driving to the radio station, I threatened them in the inch of their lives, you know, figuratively, don't you talk about me. But really, they're telling you that they got miracles under my hands. And you can hear my testimony too, and that of my grandchildren. When I was on satellite radio, I would get letters every week, and one of the letters said that there was a group of mothers who would drop off their kids at school, and then they would all join together in somebody's living room to listen to the show every morning, because on radio, on satellite radio, it was on the morning. But there are a lot of people who talk to me and then they get seduced away. I'm thinking about a family that was in my living room, and I said I would tutor their child. Okay, well, tutor is not really the right word. because I could see their oldest child needed help, and I could see the younger child too. They were playing on my living room floor. Anyway, so, and I cut my tutoring rate, but it was really therapy I was going to give them. And they turned it over and turned it over. And I said, you know, no, my wife works for doctors, and we're just going to do what they say. Oh, really? Do you think your employers are going to spend the time to give therapy to your children? That's what I was essentially doing. Do you think that MDs even know anything about that? Or you could go to that company, which I'm sure does a fine job, for $86,000. And if you don't have $86,000 and you tell them that, they'll say, well, save up until you do. Well, how long is it going to take you to save up $86,000 if you don't already have it? And what's going to happen to your child during those years? You could go and get some testing from an educational psychologist and come out with a report. And what good is that going to do you? I can tell you about reading the minutes of an ARD written by the school psychologist. That's what her title was, school psychologist. But the report wasn't written in standard English. Oh, and yes, English was her native tongue. I can tell you about school officials who treated me like an ignorant campesino, even though I was sitting there with a Phi Beta Kappa key on. And ARDS where they would tell me illegal things, and I was sitting with the statutes photocopied in a binder in front of me. And I can tell you about the lawyer who said to me, well, you know, you could hire me to go from class to class, but why don't you just privately educate your child and save that money and spend it on college? But I could tell you about a lot of homeschool students who have succeeded. I could tell you about standardized testing that shows that on average, they handily outperform their public school peers, and often they do a pretty good job against their private school peers. I can tell you about homeschool students who've come into my college classroom and have outperformed. And it's up to you what you want to do. You want to get processed through the Antichrist Beast system? Do you want to let professionals who sell whatever it is they sell take your money and leave you hanging? Or do you want to get an inexpensive guide so you can download? And if you want personal attention, you can call me. So if that's what you want, look for me at my other website, orgstrat.net, www.orgstrat.net. So that's for organizational strategies, because that's the company name I use when I'm doing consulting for private schools. So the single secret is that hope leads to faith, which leads to the right ideas. But as long as you're in the system, you're bashing your head against a brick wall, and they want to put your nose in a corner because they don't want you to see options. They want to process you. And they're going to take your money, and they're going to take your dignity, and they're going to take your time. And as long as you're looking at that stark wall, you are stuck. So do something new. Go to greatshalom.org. Go to shop. Get the program. You're not going to get any kind of upsell. You're not going to get any kind of manipulation. Or you can go elsewhere, pay $86,000. Or you could go elsewhere and pay, I don't know, thousands for testing. I don't know. Or you could go to public school and not pay anything except your taxes and get insults and injury. Or you could just go to shop and get my 12-part program. You could certainly get the book. I encourage you to get my books. The program doesn't include the books. It will tell you to go get the books. Okay, so what is this program? Well, there's 12 parts. Each has a topic, and each has got some bonus, some of my older episodes, but I try to summarize what you need to do and the steps you probably need to do them in, and say it as succinctly, you know, as possible. Because the other alternative is to hire a psychologist who is going to charge you, what, more than $100 an hour, and if you could get information out of them, would probably take you 3 hours for every one of these topics, if they even knew this information. So you've got starting with your head, going with your mouth. They're going to call that self-talk, but the faith community knows it better, because you're grounded in eternal reality and in a faith community. And then we're going to talk about food. And then we're going to talk about educational environment. Then we're going to talk about what you should teach and what kind of special, you know, so you might need some professional help, you know. But by the time you get there, have you done the steps in order? So if you can correct it with food, better than trying to correct it with pharmacopoeia. If you can correct this with exercise, better than correcting it with, you know, weekly visits to the occupational therapist. But some of those things might be necessary. So we do have a episode that we talk about the various professionals, and they got add a lot of value to you in that. We'll tell you why. And so on and so forth. And finally, teaching your child time management, because that seems to be very important in lots of students who have learning problems. And finally, how to overcome. Teaching them how to overcome after you've learned it. Okay. So we've got 12 steps, and you can go through it, you know. Well, you might be, if you're not working, you probably could listen to everything in 12 days, but it's going to take you 12 weeks to absorb it and then repeat it, you know, 12 months, you know, do step one every January, etc. Or you could find a group of PhDs and a lawyer and a school, etc., because that's what it was going to take. So if you were paying a PhD, and it's going to be more than $100 an hour, and if you could get this information, it's going to take 3 hours. So 12 times 300. And the testing, I know back in the 90s, I paid $3,000. And I had to get her tested several times. But I'm going to price this process at $240. And if you're not willing to spend $20 a session, you're just not that interested. And then buy a couple of books, paperback books that you can have printed and sent to you. So you can do it. You can get hope. You can get faith. You can get good ideas. You can get information. You can get encouraged by my testimony. You can be encouraged by some of the professionals. So as bonuses, I'm giving you some of the old episodes where I interviewed professionals. Okay. I'm not going to give you any upsells. I'm not going to give you, I mean, you can get the books, the very inexpensive books. Okay. Once you're on the website, greatshalom.org, also overcominglearningproblems.org, same website, then just go to shop. And look for Celebrate the Victory. And imagine what it's going to be like. Imagine how you'll feel when, like me, you can say, we've got victory to tell about. My student is succeeding. When my children are good, competent adults, and they can face problems with faith and conquer them. Imagine how you will feel when you could say, my kid is good. A functioning, accomplished, happy adult, ready to be a good worker, possibly business manager, and a good parent. Imagine how you will feel when you, like me, see your grandchildren strong, tall, smart, and competent. Or you can imagine how you'll feel in 10 or 20 years when you look back and say, well, you were seduced by professionals who charged geometrically more and gave you a whole lot less. Or you were too cheap, too lazy, or too overwhelmed to get this 12-part program. Okay? So We're going to price it at $240, which is really very little for a 12-part program. And for this week, I'm going to even have that, so $120. Okay, so that's it. Just go to greatshalom.org and then go to shop and look for Celebrate the Victory. I'll see you over there.